Not a Penny More, Not a Penny Less, by Geoffrey Archer. Read by Martin Jarvis.
Yorga. Expect $7 million from Crédit Parisien in the number 2 account by 6 p.m. tonight. Invest it in the overnight Eurodollar market.
Yes, Javi.
Place $1 million in the Banco Dominas Gerais Rio de Janeiro in the names of Silverman and Elliott. And cancel the call loan at Barclays Bank Lombard Street.
Yes, Javi.
Buy gold on my commodity account until it reaches $10 million. Try and buy in the troughs. And don't rush. Be patient. Understood?
Yes, Javi. Javi Metcalf realized that the last instruction was unnecessary. Jorge Birra had, over the past 25 years, proved to be one of the shrewdest bankers in Zurich.
Can you join me at Wimbledon on Tuesday, June the 25th at 2 p.m. Centre Court? My usual debenture seat?
Yes, Javi. The telephone clicked into place. Javi never said goodbye. He'd never understood the niceties of life, and it was too late to start learning now. He dialed the Lincoln Trust in Boston and asked for his secretary.
Miss Fish?
Yes, sir.
Destroy the file on Prospector Oil and any correspondence connected with it. Leave absolutely no trace.
Yes, sir.
The telephone clicked again. Harvey breathed deeply, a quiet exhalation of triumph. He was now worth at least $25 million. He opened a bottle of Krug champagne, lit a Romeo and Julieta Churchill, and settled back for a mild celebration. In Boston, Massachusetts, it was 12:20 p.m., nearly time for lunch. In Harley Street, Bond Street, the King's Road, and Magdalen College, Oxford, it was 6:20 p.m. Four men checked the market price of Prospector Oil. It was £3.70. All four were rich men, looking forward to consolidating their already successful careers. Tomorrow, they would be penniless. Making a million legally has always been difficult. Making a million illegally has always been a little easier. Keeping a million when you've made it is perhaps the most difficult of all. Henrik Metelsky was one of those rare men who had managed all three. Henrik Metelsky was born on the Lower East Side of New York on May the 17th, 1909, in a small room that already slept four children. He grew up through the Depression, believing in God and one meal a day. His parents had emigrated from Poland at the turn of the century. Henrik's father was a baker and would have liked Henrik to be an academic success. But his gifts lay elsewhere. A cunning, smart little boy, he was far more interested in controlling the underground school market in cigarettes and liquor than in stirring tales of the American Revolution. The pursuit of money and power came as naturally to little Henrik as the pursuit of a mouse to a cat. When Henrik was 14, his father died of cancer. His mother outlived her husband by no more than a few months. Henrik, like the other four children, should have gone into the district orphanage, but in the 1920s, it was not hard for a boy to disappear in New York, though it was harder to survive. Henrik became a master of survival. He knocked around the Lower East Side with his belt tightened and his eyes open, always looking for an entrance to the maze at the heart of which lay wealth and prestige. His first chance came when his roommate, Jan Pelnik, a messenger boy on the New York Stock Exchange, put himself temporarily out of action with a sausage garnished with salmonella. Henrik, deputed to report his friend's mishap to the chief messenger, upgraded food poisoning to tuberculosis and talked himself into the ensuing vacancy. He then changed his room, donned a new uniform, lost a friend, and gained a job. Most of the messages Henrik delivered during the early 20s read, "Buy," for this was a boom era. He watched men make more money in a week on the stock exchange than he could make in a lifetime on his salary. He set about learning how to master the stock exchange. He listened to private conversations, opened C